Seth Gastelum.
Because Seth Gastelum is on some sort of weird eat, pray, love pilgrimage to Mexico.
Yeah, he's dead or something. Whatever.
He's with his family. This charming fellow is Chris Dunn, and this is episode 133 of the TV List Video Game Podcast, available at TVList.net. And today, we're going to talk about a whole mess of things. But first, how's your week been, Chris?
Hasn't been bad. You know, it's been pretty uneventful until yesterday.
Yeah, what's this driving to Chicago madness?
Yeah, I had to go visit our plate supplier, our printing plate supplier, who make the plates that print our cups, to kind of do some training and you know, get to know the guy that I'm going to be working with. Not directly, obviously, because he's in Chicago, but, you know, via email and all that, which was pretty helpful. I mean, you know, get a better understanding of everything that relates to what I do. Which will obviously help me and, you know, get a better understanding of how he and I are going to work together. Which, you know, was good, but it still involved an hour and a half of driving to and from Chicago. So that was not ideal. Then on the way back, Jackie called me and told me she had a flat tire and she was trying to get AAA to come. And it was unfortunate that I was not able to do anything, you know, having to talk to her on the phone while I'm just driving home. And then AAA came to change her tire, and because she has a Volkswagen, which has some kind of special lug nut on each tire, which requires a special, like, key to unlock it, they could not do that. So then she had to wait another hour for a tow truck to come. And by the time I got home and they had towed the car home, you know, I paid the extra $4 for the extra mile, because AAA is a fantastic investment if you don't have it. Then after they left, I realized that he had parked the car in the driveway, so I could not move my car, which was wonderful, of course. So I said, okay, well, you know, I'll just drive it out into the road. It's not going to kill the tire to drive that far. And then I realized the battery was dead.
Wow, so, what the hell?
And because the tire was flat and there was snow on the ground, I was not exactly able to push it myself, so I had to push it using my car.
this is like nuts. Like, this is like,
I know, sick. I don't know how this keeps going further down the rabbit hole of insaneness.
It's like a really horrible sitcom. It's crazy.
Yeah. So it finally, once we got it out into the road, we left it there. Today we went to a Volkswagen dealership and picked up a set of those keys to unlock that lug nut. So AAA is coming tonight to fix that tire. Hopefully while we're recording this podcast. So if Smokey starts barking, you know why.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
So I literally just got home like 5 minutes ago after having a hell of a day at work and then driving in the snow to pick up Jackie and then go to the Volkswagen dealership. And I'm thrilled to be here and not on the road anymore because I'm so sick of driving after the last 2 days.
do you have Thursday and Friday off?
I do.
Nice. Nice. I actually had a really busy week. Actually, I didn't get out the last podcast. I got out episode 132 until like yesterday. Today's Tuesday the 26th. I completely forgot about it. I saw there's an instance of GarageBand opened and I was like, what is this? Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll get right on that. I had a lot of stuff too. I had to go to like this really weird, like unemployment class. Like, I guess it teaches you how to be a bum or something. I don't know. So
is it something they require if you're getting unemployment?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I heard a lot about that kind of stuff when I was getting laid off. Fortunately, I didn't have to deal with any of it. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot more red tape around that stuff than you might think.
I think it's just really designed for, like hard-nosed conservatives to feel better about us leeches on society or something. Because
it's probably accurate.
Listen, I've worked since I was 13, consistently since I was 13. I'm sorry, I've earned my unemployment.
Right.
But this class was like 3 hours, and it's not like I have so many other obligations. I can't do this thing. It's not that big of a deal, but it was still such a huge waste of time because it didn't teach me. I mean, basically, they taught you how to, like, here's how to go look for jobs in Internet Explorer. Like, go to ctjobs.com, and I'm like, I know, here's a drop-down menu, and I'm like,
what's a drop-down menu?
And listen, if you're a Luddite, or you've, you know, been out of the game for, like, a couple decades, I get it. This is actually probably really useful stuff for you. So yeah. I don't think it's, like, an awful idea, But, like, I'm a millennial. I live on the internet. I'm just ones and zeros. I don't need this. And then I had to schedule, like, each person had to schedule, like, an individual, like, follow-up session.
Ugh.
And it wasn't a big deal. Like, I mean, it was basically, like, if you needed help, you could sit there and you could talk to someone one-on-one, the person who gave the class. That's great. Because the state actually offers all kinds of really useful courses. If you're unemployed, you basically make this account online, and I'm sure that's probably a nightmare because anything having to do with government websites is garbage. But you make this account, and for 90 days, you can take as many of these courses that the state offers to unemployed people, and it's nothing useful to me. There might be one thing in there out of a million that's useful to me. It's basically stuff how to, like, use Microsoft Word, how to write a resume, you know, and I'm sure there's somebody that could really use that stuff. So I think it's great. It's not useful for me. So yeah. I go talk to this woman, and she's really nice, but it's just kind of like, cool, thanks for the 3-hour class, but I don't really need any. I know how to write a resume. I know where to look for jobs. If you can get me one, that'd be great, because that is literally the only problem I am having right now, is actually getting employed. Because there's actually, you had to fill out these sheets, like two-sided pages worth of shit when we got to this class. And, like, the final thing was, like, what do you think would help you, like, find employment? And I just wrote in big block letters, getting hired. Because that's literally all. I saw her, like, she paused at that. She paused at that, like, looked at it. Because that's right now, that's really all I have. I'm, you know, my resume is decent. I worked at a Fortune 500 company for 8 years. I am affable. If I get an interview, I think I interview fairly well. It's just, I just need to get hired. That's all I need. That's the only ingredient I'm missing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I totally hear what you're saying. You know, the economy is such that, you know, it's not necessarily that you are bad at, you know, whatever your job may be. It's just that it's hard to find a job.
It's hard to find a job. They're tough to come by because there's a huge gap here. I mean, I can't speak for the rest of the country, but here in Connecticut, there's a huge gap. There's a lot of, like, low-level stuff. And I don't want to be like that snot bag that's like, oh, stocking shelves or working at McDonald's is below me. But I hate to say it, but it kind of is. Like, I went to school. And, you know, I mean, I did my time doing that stuff, and I kind of want to work my way past it, you know?
Right.
But there's a lot of that stuff. And then there's a lot of, like, high-level stuff, like, you know, I don't know, neuroscience. Like, if you have, like, a doctorate, that's great. Then you have a lot of stuff open to you. If you're 16 and have no other options, there's a lot of stuff open to you. There's not a lot of stuff open to guys like me, like, somewhere in the middle.
Right.
Who really could use, like, making, you know, I don't need to make a lot. I'm not greedy. Something like 40 would be nice. $40 a year? I don't need a ton of money. But even that's like a pipe dream. There's just no jobs like that. They're tough to come by. And if you do happen to find one of those jobs, it's highly competitive because even people who are more qualified than you, they're going to be slumming it and they're going to be going for those jobs. And of course, the employer, they'd be crazy not to go for someone, you know, who's more educated or whatever. So,
yeah.
Womp womp. That's my life. I apply for jobs and I don't get anywhere. Sucks.
Yeah, you'll get one eventually. I mean, I don't know how the fuck I lucked out that I got a job like the very day that I was getting laid off from my other job.
Yeah, no, that is awesome.
I you know, that is absolutely not the norm. Somehow I lucked out. You know.
Yeah, you're also a little more educated than me. I have an associate's.
True, but I mean,
in liberal arts, that's garbage.
I mean, I really did get lucky, you know, obviously going from a company that makes plates and napkins to a company that makes cups, you know, it just kind of happened that, you know, a company was looking for somebody who had my particular skills. That's you know, true. I got the notice that I was going to be losing my job like 6 months before it happened. And I was maybe not as consistently as I would be if I didn't have a job, but I was looking pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And I mean, I didn't have too many interviews, so I mean, it's not necessarily how qualified you are. It's just that maybe there aren't a lot of jobs right now. You know, it sucks.
Right.
It'll work out.
So, you have any plans for Thanksgiving? That's this
nope.
week. If you're an American,
Jackie and I are going to go out to dinner. We usually don't eat at home because when we moved here, we had such a tiny kitchen that we didn't want to try to, you know, cook some big meal in this tiny apartment that we had. So we normally go out, and that's probably what we'll do this year, and then maybe do some shopping afterward, because the stores open on Thanksgiving night, which is still ridiculous, but...
You're part of the prep. You're going out to eat.
I am part of the prep. That's cool. All
right. No, that's not too bad. I think I would just go to my family's, which is my grandparents' and my grandparents' house. It kind of sucks because my parents like live there now, and that's yeah, they've been living there for like a little while. It's kind of a nightmare. Like I'll go to my grandparents' house because they give me food, which is awesome because I don't have to buy it. That is really cool. And oh, they help out like everyone in my family. Like a lot of my family members are kind of bums, but I'm the only one they haven't had to help out for the past like decade. So they got back favors, you know. But you know, I go over there not just for food. I go there to say hi to my grandparents. But like, my mom doesn't even talk to me. Like she won't even acknowledge that I'm there at all. She still won't talk. I think it's been like something like 5 years now. It's nuts.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. And my dad will sometimes talk to me, but she'll tell him not to.
Seriously?
Yeah. My dad, my upbringing was really bad. We've been over this many times.
Yeah.
My mom has not, improved in the intervening years. Like, this is why we don't talk anymore. Because I was taken away by the state when I was 16. And for 10 years, I thought I was about 25 or 26. Like, I kept trying to make that relationship work, and it just wasn't. She was nasty. And you think, like, having your kids taken away and things like this, I mean, there's a lot of problems, drugs, all this. You think that'd be, like, a wake-up call. You know what I mean? Like, oh, gee whiz, maybe I am not that awesome and I should fix it. That never happened for her. And I think it kind of happened for my dad a little bit. He mellowed out a lot, and he actually apologized. I mean, it wasn't like this, you know, I don't know, Lifetime movie moment kind of apology. But he's going, you know what? We fucked up. I'm sorry. You know, hey, I can handle that. That's cool. That's good enough for me. And so I talk to my dad occasionally. We get along all right. But I can't, like, let my mom know that I talk to him because then she takes it out on him. And so she caught me calling him once, and she gave him an earful, said not to talk. He doesn't talk to me. Why should you talk to him? Blah, blah, blah. So this is my mother. That is my mother's kind of mindset. So I'm looking forward to this. But normally when my mom did not live with my grandparents, she didn't show up for holidays. She just kind of Jabba the Hutted in her bed. And then that was, you know, ate those greasy frogs or whatever. And that was it. But you know, now that she lives there, like, I'm sure she's gonna be around, so I'm not thrilled.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it'll be nice seeing the rest of my family, I guess. You doing anything for Black Friday?
Jackie normally goes out shopping Black Friday morning, but I don't know if I know she wants to go out after we go to eat on Thursday, because, you know, Target and Best Buy and those kind of places are opening at like 6 or 8 or whatever it is. My biggest issue with Black Friday in the past was just I never wanted to get up in the morning. You know, I mean, that's not to say that I like the crowds, but, you know, anytime you go shopping, you deal with crowds. So,
yeah,
we might just go after dinner. I don't know what we're going to do on Friday if we go shopping, or we might just put up, you know, Christmas decorations, because that's normally what we do right after Thanksgiving.
Gotcha. See, for me, Black Friday, there's rarely, like, anything worth it for me to, like, go out and fight these crowds and then stand in line for, like, 3 hours.
Yeah, I feel much the same way. I mean, usually there'll be some video games or DVDs or something I want, which usually will be available online at Walmart or Target or wherever, or Amazon will match it, so.
Right.
I mean, and I think I'm going to do the same thing this year, but, you know, since she's going out and I'll be awake, I figure, you know, if you're going to go out, you know, I'll spend some time with you. And
yeah, that works. That, so.
I'm not really going out looking for anything specific. So.
Yeah. I mean, usually, like, I remember the one time I went out for, like, Black Friday, it was to, like, Best Buy. Ass cold out. And I got there at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, because there was just a couple of video games I had that were, like, really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this fight. It wrapped. I mean, you know the Waterford Best Buy. This line was wrapped across the face, down the side, and then down the back of the building.
That's ridiculous.
And I looked at that, and I said, fuck this, and I went home and went back to bed. Like, I don't care. Like, $20 off a video game is not worth this. I'll get that game later.
Yeah. Whatever. That's normally how I feel. Or, I mean, in recent years, you know, Amazon usually matches, like, everything with their lightning deals. So,
if I
know, I think the biggest thing I'm hoping to get is Last of Us, which is going to be $25.
Where's that at?
At Walmart, and I'm hoping Amazon will match that, so.
I might pick it up at that price.
I wasn't super excited for it, as I haven't picked it up for the last 6 months or whatever, but for $25 I'll check it out.
Mm. I mean, basically, like, if I don't buy a game at launch, I can keep waiting for it. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, at launch is when it's really exciting and people are talking about it, and it's hard to resist it. But once you get past that first couple weeks, it's like, whatever.
Yeah. Whew, all right. Well, we actually do have a little bit of news this week. Atlus has announced a whole bunch of Persona stuff. They've released a teaser for Persona 5, and which is exciting. That's going to be for PlayStation 3. Which is not that weird to me, because Persona 4 was really late.
Yeah, they're known for that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, it makes total sense to me. I mean, they're probably just getting a handle on the PlayStation 3 hardware. I think throwing the PlayStation 4 in there, no way, no dice. So that's perfectly fine, and I'll be looking forward to that. They also announced Persona Q, which is it's with the developers of Etrian Odyssey. And it's an Etrian Odyssey esque Persona game, first-person dungeon crawler, which is almost sort of like the mainline Shin Megami Tensei games.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually not that far removed from that particular brand. And the characters are all chibi-style, and it's a mashup of three and four, I think. And that seems really cool. I actually really like that idea. I actually like all these ideas. Then there's Persona Dancing All Night, which is a, like, rhythm music game for the Vita. I'm down with that. That's fine. And then there's Persona 4. There's P4U. It's Ultimax Ultra Suplex Hold. It's a sequel to Persona 4 Arena.
Seems like they're covering all their bases here.
They are, yeah. We got it. We got a new, you know, Persona game, new RPG. Then we got a first-person dungeon crawler. We got a rhythm game, and we got a fighting game. And I mean, once I saw that, I was like, you know, it feels like a really weird exploitation of the Persona franchise. But I mean, if the games are all fun, I mean, the Persona games have fantastic music. So, like, a music rhythm game, not that weird, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I chuckle at that, but it seems like some of the rhythm games that have come out lately have been, you know, really solid. You know, like, we had Rhythm Thief and Theater Rhythm.
Theater Rhythm, yep.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, Theater Rhythm.
Check this out. I mean, I've always been interested in the Persona games, although I've never played any. I have Persona 4 Golden on the Vita, and I've been meaning to play it, but just haven't gotten around to it.
Stop everything and play that game.
I know, that's what everybody keeps telling me, but.
You gotta power through the first hour or so, because it's really annoying. But the game is just, it's golden after that.
I see
what I did there. Persona Q is for the 3DS, Dancing All Night for the Vita, and I suppose Ultimax Ultra Suplex Hold is probably for, like, consoles or whatever. I'm excited. I mean, as long as the games are good, I mean, Persona 4 Arena was good, so I don't suspect that P4U will be any different. You know, a Persona game with the Etrian Odyssey developers, that seems solid. I'm not a first-person dungeon crawler fan. Even though I buy, like, all these Shin Megami Tensei games, I have a bunch of Etrian Odysseys, and I still buy them, and I still play them, because there's parts of it that are still appealing to me. And I will be buying this, of course.
Of course.
And with the great music that in Persona games, it just makes sense to have a music really. A lot of this stuff just really makes a lot of sense. I don't think it seems exploitative on the surface, but a lot of them really make sense. And as long as they're good games, I don't see the problem.
I think it seems exploitative because they announced so many at once, you know? If these were spread out,
yeah,
people might not think so much of it.
Well,
I mean, I don't remember people saying too much when Persona 4 Arena came out.
Right, but I mean, really, though, it's really been sparse in terms of not just Persona announcements, but even just straight-up Shin Megami Tensei announcements. There really hasn't been a whole lot of it lately.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying it is exploitative. I'm just saying it may seem that way because it's, you know, such a barrage all at once.
Right, right. Yeah. But I think if you think about it, it's really not that surprising. They've probably been working on all of this stuff for, like, a while now.
Yeah.
It's probably been brewing for, like, a while, so.
I'm sure. I mean, Persona 4 Arena, Persona 4 Golden came out, what, a year ago?
Yeah, and Persona 4.
It's been a while, so.
Yeah, Persona 4 itself came out, like, even longer ago. And we don't really get as many. There aren't that many spin-offs. There were a bunch, like, on, like, the PlayStation 2. Was it Digital Devil Story? Or is that Saga? Digital Devil Saga. And then you had, like, Devil Summoner, you know, there's, like, Devil Survivor on the DS.
Right.
They sort of slowed down with, like, with other brands in the Shin Megami Tensei umbrella. So Persona is probably the biggest one, especially in the West. So it makes sense to sort of capitalize on that from from a financial perspective, especially if you're a company like Atlas that's been kind of battered around a little bit lately. Right. Y'all right over there?
Yeah.
You hanging in there?
I'm all right.
All right.
I was eating a sandwich and I got a piece of something stuck in my throat. Okay. Don't mind me eating my sandwich while we podcast.
Wash that down with a little more beer.
Yeah, that's the plan.
I got my Xbox One.
How is it? What do you think? How are those TV features?
Yeah, I didn't set that up.
All right, I know you didn't have any games with it, so.
No, I don't have any games. My immediate reaction is not that positive. I wouldn't call it negative. I stopped totally short of calling it negative because it's not. But, you know, you open it up, and this thing is like twice the size of the PS4.
Yeah, I hear it's huge.
Not only is it huge, but it's really intimidating looking. Like, sharp angles and corners. And this weird, like, unattractive grill design on the top of it. Mm. And not only that, this is what I don't understand. It's supposedly less powerful than the PS4. It's bigger than the PS4, but it still needs an external power supply, which the PS4 does not.
Right.
So it's this giant, black, menacing, borderline unattractive box with a separate power brick. Not to mention the Kinect. Kinect is also similarly like angry and angular looking. I actually think the first Kinect looked a lot more appealing.
Yeah, I haven't seen the new one or you know, paid too much attention to it, but I don't think the first Kinect looks bad.
No, it looks fine. This is just a brick. It's a giant black brick sitting underneath my TV. So there's more cables, there's more pieces, it's bigger, it's heavier. I think it's not as friendly looking, I guess.
It's more hardcore, Craig.
It is more hardcore. And then, also in the box, this is great. You get your PS4. In the box is a 30-day trial to PlayStation Plus. 30-day trial to Music Unlimited, but who cares about that? So you get 30 days to PlayStation Plus, and then a $10 credit to the PlayStation Store. That's great. That's a really good thing to get out of the box. The Xbox One gives you 15 days to live and a day one achievement. That's what's in that box. So, and I haven't scanned it yet. I heard they're going for a few bucks on eBay, so I might even just, whatever. My controller's just day one, 2013. That's all that matters to me. In 20 years, that if anything's going to matter, it's going to be that. It's not going to be the fucking achievement. So I might just sell it. Whatever. I don't care. I don't care about achievements.
I'm sure there are plenty of people who do care. I mean,
and will want that day. Yeah, it's just a QR code.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I might just sell that. I haven't redeemed it yet. So
I say go for it, yeah.
So immediately, just the experience, like, just out of the box is not as appealing. And then I feel like the user interface is not as friendly. In fact, I find it overwhelming. There's a lot of, like, these little tiles, and sometimes navigating to, like, an area doesn't really make sense. Like, I couldn't find I want to change something in settings, so I'm just, like, I'm trying to find it. So finally, I'm just, like, Xbox settings. That's not a thing. But that seems like it would be a thing. That seems like you could say Xbox settings. I don't know if you need to say Xbox go to settings. I didn't try it because you need to tell it to go to things.
I've heard that, and it sounds really counterintuitive. Like, you can't say play Forza. You have to say, like, go to Forza Motorsport 5. And you'd think they could make that a little more streamlined.
Oh, it gets a little weirder, but I'll get that in a second. You can't even say Xbox go to TV. It's Xbox watch TV. So it's not even as...
It's not even, like, consistent.
Right. So here's where it gets weirder. Now, I downloaded Killer Instinct, and I pinned it. So on my home screen, you can see the first, like, you have to scroll to the left to see all your pins, but you can see the first three pins on, like, the actual home screen without scrolling left. Mm-hmm. And then the last, like, three things that you have that you played or did or opened or whatever, they're across the bottom. Now, in my case, they're basically the same things because I don't have a whole lot going on. So I said, Xbox, go to Killer Instinct. And it goes, and then it asks me which one. And then it overlays on the pins, item one, and then on my recently played, item two. And I'm like, it's the same fucking thing. It's like if you had your computer and you had a shortcut to Outlook on your desktop, and then you also had it in your taskbar. And you said, Windows, go to Outlook. And it goes, which one? And it's like, it's the same
thing. They go to the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same exact thing. So I'm like, what do you mean, which one? So I'm like, the voice command, and sometimes you got to repeat yourself with the voice commands. I was trying to show people, and it wasn't cooperating. So they're hit or miss. They seem kind of inconsistent with go to or watch, and you need these oddly specific phrases. And then even when you have the specific phrase, it just doesn't know which one to play, even though they're the same exact thing.
Uh-huh.
So
that's ridiculous. I did not hear about that.
It surprised me. I had no idea. And when I saw it, I was like, what are you doing?
Which killer instinct do you want to play? Which one do you think?
it was really weird. And I find where it buries things just not... See, here's the thing. You can learn any menu. You can learn any user interface. So to say that, like, when I say it's not a very good user interface, it's not very intuitive, that is not to say that I can't learn it with time. But it is to say that it's very difficult to learn it. It's not... I feel like the PlayStation 4s, I know exactly... I didn't need to read anything. I needed to fumble around. I knew pretty much where everything was because it was intuitive. It was simple. It facilitated my needs. It said, here's the stuff, and then it gets the hell out of my way. And that's what I want from a user interface. Mm-hmm. I also prefer something that's a little more human, maybe a little more graphical, because I don't like staring at laundry lists of words. It's not... I don't think most people do. But anyway... The Xbox One just seems to bury things in weird places, and I couldn't... Like, I downloaded Netflix, and then I just didn't know where it went. And because I wanted to pin it.
It seems like they'd want that to be prominent. I mean, isn't that such a popular thing on Xbox in particular?
I would assume so. So, I mean, and then I didn't want to open it, so I couldn't say, like, Xbox, go to Netflix. You know, because I wanted... Mm-hmm. I didn't want to open the app. I just wanted to find what it was and then assign it to a pin, to pin it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I couldn't fucking find where it went, I went all the way back to the store. Because from the store, you can pin things from the store. Which means you can actually pin things before you buy them. Which basically turns it into... And no, that's actually really kind of cool, because that turns it into like almost like a wish list in your pins. So like I have like Crimson Dragon pins, but I haven't bought it yet. So if I ever want to get around to buying that, it's in my pins already. I don't have to go searching for it again. So it's actually really kind of cool. So I went back through the store to find Netflix and then pin it from there. just does that seem... And I'm sure...
Yeah, there's a problem if you have to go back to the store to figure out how to get something you already have.
Yeah. And I'm sure it was somewhere. I'm sure there was some menu where it was hiding. But it just did not seem intuitive to me. Not like the PlayStation 4. Because the PlayStation 4, you know, your primary menu is like this row of tiles, just one singular row, and these are your applications. You have like any games you've downloaded, the game that you have in the disk drive, and then you scroll over and there's like TV and video. Now with all these tiles, you see a glimpse underneath them, just sort of like a glimpse of like another screen, and if you press down, that takes you to like something that's very similar to the live area screen on the Vita for each application. So like if you scroll over to like TV video, you can see that below that, there's more stuff, that there's Hulu and Netflix underneath there. You don't have to go find... It makes sense. TV video. Oh, I can see the red square. I just scroll down. It's really intuitive. It's just far more simpler and more elegant. I don't know where shit goes on the Xbox yet. And I'll probably figure it out. But, you know, I think it's going to take a while. I think it's going to take a lot longer. It's a difference between, like I said, the PS4's user interface wants to stay as much out of your way as possible. It wants you to do what you have to do, and it doesn't want to get up in your face. The Xbox One, by design, wants to be in the middle of you and your content. That's its whole... As a hub, that's its whole point. I don't need to plug my cable box in my Xbox One. Why would I need to do that? And so the Xbox One gets between me and even more of my content. Now, some people want that. I don't. I want my user interfaces to be simple, human, easy to understand, and then I just don't want it in my way after that.
That's fair.
So that's my first reaction. Now, I'm sure as a video game machine, I'm sure as putting in a disc and playing it, unless it's eating your disc, because apparently some Xbox ones are doing that.
I've heard that.
So if you just want to put in a disc and play a game, if you just want to pin something as soon as you figure out where it lives and how to pin it, and just go to a game... I think that it's going to be just fine for that. But it's, you know, it's supposed to be this multimedia hub, and I find it sort of obtuse in how things are organized.
Yeah, it's surprising if they want this to be the one machine that, you know, everybody uses. And, I mean, if you watch the commercials, you know, they show, you know, a guy playing video games and then showing his girlfriend and she, you know, she uses it for TV. And I mean, if it's that complicated, it, it seems like that's counterintuitive to exactly what they're going for. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Especially,
yeah.
I mean, the voice command stuff, because they've highlighted that so much. And yeah. I mean, I'm sure the stuff will improve as it goes on. I mean, if you look at, you know, the 360 versus what it was when it first came out versus what it is now, I mean, it's completely different.
Yes.
I'm sure the Xbox One will evolve as well, but, you know, if I were buying one on day one and, you know, you're going to see the stuff that you're really excited about and it's just not, you know, what they claim it to be, that's very unfortunate.
I think, like, even just some of the appearance of some of the screens, it just does not, like, if you go to Friends, the first thing you come to is, like, a feed. It's, like, a whole feed of something that everyone's done. Now, PlayStation 4 separates that. The first screen you see on PlayStation 4 is what's new, and then it tells, and if you push down, again, it's one of those tiles, and if you push down to the screen below it, you'll see, like, so-and-so got this trophy, so-and-so started playing this game, so-and-so set a new high score.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. It's a completely separate feed. If I go to my friends list, it's my friends. On Xbox One, if you go to friends, the first screen you see is that feed. And then you have to go down, and then you have to go to a separate screen to see who's online. And then it's displayed in this weird, like, lineless grid, almost like the iOS calendar, which I don't like.
Yeah.
The new iOS 7 calendar. So it's a lot like that. So, like, even just some of the designs of, like, the screens, I don't really like them. And how the fact that I have to click several times to see who's online, that does not...
Right.
It's not appealing.
It sounds unnecessarily cumbersome.
It does, yeah. It's you know, it's... PlayStation 4 is just simple, elegant, and Xbox One just feels kind of like a lumbering dinosaur. It still has, like, that weird, you know, on the 360 when you press something on a menu, it goes, boom, and it takes, like, a second. And just for... I hate that. I've always hated that because it just makes it feel slower. Just that, even that noise, it's kind of like, it's like a sigh almost. Like the machine just doesn't want to do what you're telling it to do. And so it still does that. It still takes a second to bring stuff up. And sometimes, even a couple times, I still got those stupid fucking spinning circles like the 360 has in the center of the screen.
Really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was trying to do Avatar stuff and it was doing the spinning circles. I had a game crash too. I've never had like a downloadable game on a console crash to the home menu. That's such a new experience, and it was almost as if I said Xbox go home, because it kind of zoomed out. And Xbox One has that weird like live like tile of your game or your application that's still playing.
Mm-hmm.
So it just like zoomed out of Killer Instinct, and I thought like, well, I didn't tell you to go. I didn't press the guide button. I didn't tell it to go home. And so I clicked on Killer Instinct again, and it took me back to the main menu. So I'm like, oh, it crashed. And there's just no indication that that happened, you know? It's just almost as if the game just kicks you out unceremoniously.
That's weird.
And people have had games crash on the PS4, right? That's not unique. But it's just that's just part of the experience so far for me, which has been not particularly awesome. And then when you have a game crash, you're sort of like, this is not unique. Games crash in all sorts of systems, but it doesn't really engender any good feelings.
Right.
So like I said, as a video game machine, as you know, if you just want to put in video games and then maybe watch Netflix once you figure out where the hell it is, it'll probably be fine. I just feel like anything else is at this point, like trying to like learn it is really cumbersome. And so between the two, I actually prefer the PS4, which is strange because, I mean, we all know I've, you know, been a little cranky about the PS3, but...
Absolutely.
But, you know...
Understandably so, I mean...
Right,
it sounds like Sony has learned from their mistakes, and that's...
It's too early to call, of course.
No, absolutely.
But, I mean, my initial reaction, that's all it is, my initial reaction, I like the PS4 more than I like the Xbox One. But if you want to know which next-gen console you should get this holiday season, I'm going to tell you Wii U. I think Mario World has finally been like that one good system seller for the system. And
I haven't played a ton of it yet. I've been you know, sucked into Zelda, but
me too. I've had a tough time tearing myself. I played two worlds in Mario.
Yeah, I've played the first world. I finished the first world, and that's all I played so far. But even the first world is pretty fantastic, so I'm definitely excited to play some more.
Absolutely. And so, like, but that's, and you know what, that might be the Wii U's only must-own game, but then again, the Xbox One, neither the Xbox One or PS4 have one themselves.
Right. I think the Wii U has a pretty good library. I mean, maybe not a lot of must-own stuff. Like,
right.
If you buy one for Mario, I think there's definitely some other stuff to check out.
And that's a good segue into talking about the Wii U, because it is now a year old. And now that I feel like it does have a must-own game, a system seller in Super Mario 3D World, that's a good point about the Wii U's library. And that's exactly how I feel about the Wii U's library. There are a handful of good games in there, retail and digital. But I don't blame anyone for feeling like none of those games are worth buying the system for. Like, yeah, Zombie U is pretty neat, or, you know, Toki Tori 2 is pretty neat, or whatever, Pikmin 3, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be frank, those aren't really system sellers, and I don't blame anyone for feeling like they're not. But they're the sorts of, they are the sorts of games where you put a pin in them and say, okay, I will come back to this later when,
totally,
when there's actually a game that I really want to get for the system. So now that Super Mario 3D World is likely that for that game for many people, it is worth to go back and look at Lego City, or, you know, Wonderful 101, or whatever, all these games that you were like, yeah, that looks okay. You know, so the Wii U's library is a little bit better than I think people give it credit for. But like you said, no true must owns until now.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I haven't used my Wii U as much as I would like to have over the last year or so.
Oh, I have. I play Netflix on it. I'm not kidding. That's what I use. I love using the
gamepad. No, I believe you. I mean, that's perfectly valid use for it, but I mean, as far as the gaming machine, I mean, there are, I think, quite a few good experiences on it. But
absolutely,
like you said, you know, not a lot of stuff that are necessarily worth buying the system for. But I hope some people, you know, the people who buy the system because, you know, Mario World is out, definitely go back and check out some of that other stuff. You know, even if it's not gonna sell you the system, I think now that you have the system, it's definitely some stuff you're going to have fun with.
Absolutely. And I think that next year, 2014, will be a good year for Wii U, as long as things actually come out. Mario Kart and Donkey Kong Country, Bayonetta 2, and fingers crossed, like Super Smash Brothers. Like, that's a pretty good year from one publisher on the platform.
And that's not even everything. I mean, we got X 2 supposedly coming out next year. I mean, there's
that's a possibility, yeah.
Yarn Yoshi coming out at
Yarn
some
Yoshi,
point.
Yeah. So if all those, I mean, I would be surprised actually if all those came out in 2014. Pleasantly surprised.
You're probably right, but there's definitely some stuff to look forward to for sure.
And
I'm sure that, you know, there will be more announcements as we get into 2014. So,
but
I'm excited.
Yeah. I think. What is it? Mario Kart and Donkey Kong Country are definitely locks. I would be surprised if those slipped very much at all. So, I mean, throw in, you know, two other games from that list. Not to mention the other things I'm sure Nintendo has up their sleeves. And Nintendo machines traditionally, well, I shouldn't say traditionally, but within the past, I don't know, 15 years or so, 20 years or so, have not been havens for, you know, third parties. But
right,
every one of them has had good third-party software. You have to go, sometimes you have to go looking for it, but it's there. So even if one or two third-party games come in, that's a pretty solid year. I'm not going to complain if there's, say, you know, six really good games coming out for the Wii U next year. That seems kind of sad. Six games, yes, but hey, that's better than this past year, man. I'm not going to complain. And plus, we have like all these indie games that came from Kickstarter that had Wii U stretch goals.
Yeah,
and I'm sure a bunch of those are due to come out in 2014. So I think it'll be a much better year for the Wii U. So I'm excited for that. There's still good stuff coming out. Nintendo rarely disappoints me as a publisher. I'm not a Nintendo fan for really irrational reasons. Like, it's just they happen to be the publisher that puts out the games that I like. That's just all. And as soon as they stop doing that, I won't be a fan anymore. But they put out a lot of games across two systems, and they're generally pretty good. So they rarely disappoint me.
Same here.
So that's the Wii U. I think that's all the news, all the stuff that I wanted to talk about. So let's do some. We're doing listener input. If you are a listener and you want to give us input, it could be a question. It could be just a remark about a game that you're playing. You just want to talk a little bit about a game plan. That's totally fine. You can go to tmulus.net. There's a big banner that says mailbag. You can drop us a comment. All your information is private. You can actually give us bullshit. Some guy says fake at fakemail.com. And that's that's his email address. And I can see that. And it doesn't really matter because no one else can see it. It doesn't matter. So just come on.
The only time it really matters is when we occasionally give out stuff. So
that is
true. If we're going to give you something free, definitely give us your real email. But
yeah.
Feel free to be fake at fakeemail.com.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. First up, we have Nathan. He says, "Hey guys, and not Seth. I've been playing the hell out of A Link Between Worlds, and I'm absolutely in love with it. I feel it's the perfect marriage between retro and modern Zelda games. And I'm wondering if you think that idea could carry over to other franchises like Metroid or Star Fox or even Star Tropics and work well. Anyways, thanks and keep up the awesome." Obviously, it would work with Metroid because, I mean, a lot of people like Prime, but they seem to prefer 2D Metroid. And
that's kind of the boat I'm in. I mean, I love the Prime games, but Super Metroid is one of my favorites of all time. And the same goes for the GBA games.
Yeah. And it hasn't been that long since Fusion. Well, actually, maybe it has, come to think of it.
It's been over a decade.
Has it really? It's been, okay, I guess it has been.
Fusion was the same time as Metroid Prime.
That's right.
2002. Oh, we did have Zero Mission in 2004. But that was the last 2D Metroid game, so it's certainly been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if you would classify that as retro at this point, maybe. But either way, I think most people would be down for a new 2D Metroid. I don't think anyone would complain about that at all. Star Fox. See, here's the problem. Like, you can't marry modern elements of Star Fox because nobody but me likes modern elements of Star Fox. Fair. So
everybody just wants classic Star Fox.
Everyone just wants another Star Fox 64.
Star Fox 64 too.
And that's a fantastic game, so I mean, I can't blame them.
No.
But yeah, let's not marry modern elements of Star Fox. People don't seem to like doing that stuff.
Right.
Star Tropics? There isn't even a modern Star Tropics.
I know.
I
mean, elements of modern games with, you know, classic Star Tropics.
Yeah. That could work. And I definitely would love to see that. But
yeah, same here. I love Star Tropics. Star Tropics until it came to the virtual console, and I still think it's fantastic.
That game is hard as shit, though.
It's hard, don't get me wrong, and it certainly shows its age, you know, with, like, the fucking grid-based layout and stuff, but I still really like it.
I still really like it, too. The second one's waiting. Did you play the second one on the virtual
console? I have not played the second one, no.
That one is a lot easier.
I have a copy, but that doesn't mean I played it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I tore through that game, no problem. I mean, the first Star Tropics gave me so much grief, but that is such an epic game. Like, I hate using that word, but it's like, hey, come see your uncle on Sea Island. And then all of a sudden, you're saving an alien race from a fucking xenomorph that barfs shit up, and the kids are trapped in a cube. How do you get from that? You're just like, you're in this tropical island, and then you're on an alien spaceship.
Yep.
That game is
epic is pretty much the perfect word to describe that game.
The second one's really weird, though. That one, you go in the past. You have to collect. I think they're actually Tetras. I think they're called Tetras. There actually are Tetris pieces you have to find.
What?
And you have to save them from, like, Zoda's clones or something like that. It's like Zoda X, Zoda Y, and Zoda Z, I think. Yeah, that was really weird. But you can actually move diagonally in that game.
I have that, yeah.
I found that game so much easier. I finished that without much of a problem, but the first one gave me so much grief.
First one is hard.
Yeah, that's a tough game. Especially if you don't have, especially like Navcom, he's like, please, like, input code or something like that. You're like, fuck you, I rented this from Blockbuster, I don't know the code.
Just dip the letter in the water. What?
What letter? I actually have the letter in mine.
I do too.
Undipped.
So do I.
Johnny 2900 says, "What do you guys think about Black Friday deals? I find it ridiculous. Stores are now going to be open on Thanksgiving Day in order for people to get the best deal on things on someone's Christmas wish list. I do understand the importance of finding the latest deal, but shouldn't employees be able to spend time with their family on Thanksgiving?" I agree. The problem is, like, this seems to be like a new mindset. Everyone's like, "Oh man, we got to preserve Thanksgiving," but then like, hundreds of people show up to trample employees to death, so clearly it's not the prevailing mindset. People still seem happy to go out shopping on Thanksgiving. I guess my opinion is, like, there's nothing I can do about it. What can you do about it? That's just how that's how it works now. I don't go out. I don't find any need to, and I'm not a fan of the idea of stores opening up on Thanksgiving afternoon myself, so I'm not going to go. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, at the same time, like, clearly people are going to be buying shit. So it's... I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the idea, but, I mean, like I said, I'm going to be going out. But I'm, you know, this... Johnny suggests that they should be able to spend time with their family on Thanksgiving. That's the reason I'm going out, is to spend time with my wife, because she's going to go shopping.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I totally see where they're coming from, you know.
Right.
I don't necessarily think they should be open, but if they are, I mean...
I mean, he's saying...
Jackie wants to go out, I'll take advantage of it, too, but...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if those people shouldn't have to work. I mean, I worked retail for several years, and I never had to work Thanksgiving, and I would totally be pissed if I had to, so...
Yeah,
I can totally see where they're coming from.
I worked at McDonald's it's not retail, but that's the closest
right. That's
the closest thing I have comparison to. When I worked there, we were sometimes open on Thanksgiving. I think I worked a couple Thanksgiving, but it was totally volunteer. Like, if they could get together enough of a crew to work Thanksgiving, we worked Thanksgiving and we got time and a half. And, you know, every now and then it was perfectly fine. I didn't really care. Man, listen, working retail is a garbage fucking job.
It is.
And as I illustrated earlier in this podcast, it's tough to find a job out there. I'm sure there are plenty of people working retail. They're probably overqualified for retail. They don't need to be working. They could probably be working somewhere else, but they can't. That's the only job they can. And now they're stuck doing shit like this.
Yeah.
I do feel bad for them. I do. I totally have empathy for that. And it's dangerous. Like, employees have been trampled to death, man. People turn into wild fucking animals about this stuff, so it's nuts. So I don't know. I don't know if it should be less about spending time with their families on Thanksgiving and not spending time in the hospital on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, really.
So it's just one of the things that, like, you can't change. This was coming. You could see this coming for a long time, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's been getting earlier and earlier every year. I mean, it used to be. You know, stores are open at 6 a.m., and now it seems like that was, you know, a lifetime ago.
Yeah, now they're actually open the day before. Yeah.
Right.
It's nuts. So.
But I'm part of the problem, so.
You are part of the problem. Jeremy says, hey, TV Lost crew, just wondering how you guys felt about Kinect 2.0. I picked up an Xbone at launch. I thought it would be okay with integrating the console into my entertainment center, but now I just feel like someone's watching or could watch. As of now, I just lay a small towel over the camera, but I'm not really totally at ease with this. Thoughts? Listen, I'm going to be totally candid. I don't wear pants a lot. I live by myself. Sometimes I just don't wear anything. I get out of the shower. Who the hell am I dressing to impress? Nobody. And yes, the Kinect can see me if it's looking. I don't know if it is. And just the other day, like, I realized, like, huh. Like, if someone totally wanted to see my junk, they could be looking at my junk right now. So I don't know. I mean, I didn't put on pants, so clearly it doesn't make me that uneasy. but if the thought did cross my mind. Supposedly they're not looking at my junk. Supposedly it's not a thing they want to see. I don't know why. They're kind of crazy, because who doesn't? But they're probably not. But it is kind of weird to have a camera just pointing at your living room.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't put much thought into this because I don't have any plans to buy an Xbox One anytime soon. But, I mean, I've seen people talk about this, and, you know, I could see why you'd be a little uneasy about that. But I don't know if it would prevent me from not wearing pants. Comfort over privacy.
Right? Yeah, pants. God dang. Why do I want my legs wrapped in things when they don't have to be? Liam says,
I'm gonna take my pants off right now.
Liam says, hey guys, I was just wondering what your thoughts on the whole renting system and a Link Between Worlds compared to other Zelda entries where you just find the items on your travels were. I'm enjoying it besides the fact that there is an option to just rent all the items you had before rather than pressing A on each item again and having to go through all the dialogue after you lose them all from a game over. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about a Link Between Worlds a little later in the podcast, but overall I think it is a wonderful thing. It is such a fantastic idea. But I've only died once. In fact, because you do. Like, you can't just go back and be like, give me everything I already had. You do have to go to each item and talk to Ravio about the item and rent it. But all I did was die once. I died. What boss killed me? Was it... Oh, shit. What one killed me? It was that lava one. It was that fucking turtle. And
I think that's the one I died at, too. I died a few times at that
he
one.
He took so many hits!
I think that was the first dungeon I went to.
Me, too. That guy's a crazy damage sponge.
Yeah.
And he killed me, and I said, fuck this noise. So then I just spent an hour farming all the rupees to buy everything.
Yeah.
I was not losing everything again. No way. All it took was that one death. That guy's a dick.
Yeah, he is.
But yeah, we'll talk a little more about The Link Between Worlds a little later. David Proctor says, "Hey guys, now that we're in late November, it seems as though the holidays are nearly upon us. I find myself pulling out a copy of Mario Kart 64 Ocarina of Time each year around this time. They bring me back to when I was quite young. My siblings would either race against me or allow me to watch as they attempted to complete a temple. Now I'm almost 22, and I'll be graduating university this spring. My sister is married and is due to give birth to her daughter literally at any time now. And my brother is busy with teaching. In other words, we're all getting old, and it feels like childhood was eons ago. I realize how ridiculous that sounds coming from a 21-year-old. Not necessarily. Maybe a little, but... But every year around Christmas time at some point, I seem to end up playing these games, even if only for an hour or so. Do either of you find yourselves going back and playing games from the past around this time? Apologies for the long-winded lead-up to a fairly simple question. Love the podcast, guys, and keep up the great work." I guess sometimes, I don't have like a ritual or anything, but sometimes, you know, you get a little nostalgic in the same way that you get nostalgic for like a particular song or something, and so you want to pop in Donkey Kong Country or something like that. And, you know, like he says, for just an hour or so, you don't want to play through the game. You just want to kind of experience. You kind of want to experience those memories again and let that sort of emotion take over you. So not habitually or anything, but sometimes, yes, I do that.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I know I have done this in the past, but it's certainly not a regular thing that I schedule or do every year or anything. Particularly because as I get older, I just don't have a lot of time to play a ton of games anymore. And, you know, around this time, there are so many coming out that I just, you know, I don't have time to play games that I've already beaten before.
Right.
But I do that at times. It's just not necessarily a regular thing.
Africhi says, "Okay, when the hell was episode 132 uploaded that I didn't notice it?" Yeah, man, I was totally a week late on that. I actually legitimately had a busy week. I wasn't just loafing around, so sorry about that. I thought you guys were just slacking off like you're supposed to. I was a little bit. It wasn't just you. Anyway, since a proper greeting has been made, here's my question. Have you ever smoked, be it cigarettes, pot, whatever? I would ask for your stance on alcohol, but seriously, I'm pretty sure all of your listeners have regretted their relationship with alcohol. I am drinking Merlot right now. I do love me some little bit of alcohol. I have smoked cigarettes twice, and not even like a full cigarette. I was working at McDonald's, and you know what? That's the kind of like job where you have where people get to just fucking drop everything and go for a cigarette break. And I'm like, motherfucker, can I just walk away and do nothing for 10 minutes? So I remember one time I was outside with a couple people smoking, and one guy says, "Hey, you want to try it?" And I'm like, "I'll give it a shot." Took a drag. Sucked so bad, so gross. And then some guy's like, "Yo, I had menthol." So I tried that. I'm like, "That is minty gross. That is disgusting." So that's it. It was just like, it was literally two drags. It's all I've done with a cigarette. Pot? Should I be talking about anything about pot when it's recorded and on the internet?
Probably not.
Maybe I've smoked pot. Maybe. Maybe I have. But we don't really know because I'm not going to say.
That's probably a good decision.
How about you, Chris?
I have not tried cigarettes. Maybe because my parents smoked growing up and I just had no interest in it whatsoever. I have actually not tried pot.
No.
No. You know, I knew a lot of people who did in college. There's not really any reason that I didn't.
I guess that doesn't really surprise me now that I think about it. You straight edge motherfucker.
To be fair, I didn't drink until like last year.
I know.
Started doing this podcast, I remember saying
that. We've driven Chris to alcohol.
Things have changed since then.
Yeah, I've smoked pot, whatever. No job, no employer is ever going to... I know. Crazy, right?
I don't know if I can do this podcast.
I've never bought it. I've never sourced it out. But if I'm with someone, they're like, "Hey, okay, it's fine."
I actually knew people in college who sold pot and who eventually went past that and just started making fake IDs.
Oh, wow. See, I'm not that into it, you know? And actually, I think, like... And no one I know has been that into it. Like... I mean, well, they're a little more into it if they buy it. That's a little more into it than me. But, like, there are a lot of, like, potheads who are, like, super into it. Where, like, they don't shut the fuck up. You know how I know you're a stoner? Because you don't shut up about it. That's how I know. I remember I went to see Pineapple Express in theaters, and there were just so many potheads whooping and hollering every single time weed was on the screen, which was like three quarters of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you guys are fucking annoying. That's cool. You smoke weed. That's awesome. Cool. You guys are cool.
Yeah. I don't have anything against weed. I mean, I've just never tried.
You don't have to defend yourself to me. You can be like, nah, I'm not.
I'm just telling you, man.
I don't care. I could take it or leave it myself.
Defending myself to the listeners. They're going to think less of me now.
They're not going to think less of you. I'm sure there are very many complicated opinions about weed. I honestly, it should not be illegal. There is no way. I guarantee you there's a lot of political shit in there. Going back to the days of hemp and today in the modern era of cigarettes. You think fucking the cigarette companies want pot legal? I'm sure even alcohol companies don't.
Yeah.
It's really not that bad. It's not very harmful, you know. I mean, obviously you shouldn't be like driving or going to work high, but you can say that about being drunk or whatever too, and that's legal, so.
Right.
Use responsibly. I don't think weed is really all that bad, and I really don't think it should be illegal. I think it should totally be decriminalized. Of course, then all our for-profit prisons here in America, because that's a thing, would lose a lot of their, I don't know, clientele.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. I mean, it's all political shit. It's dumb.
It is, yeah.
No, I mean, I like I said, I've never used it, but yeah, it's totally dumb.
BK McClinton says, wow, he said a lot of things. All right, let's try this.
Did you skip over the other Jeremy?
Did I?
I think you did.
No, I did not. That's coming.
Okay.
No, I need to refresh. I need to approve the comment. Whoops. I did skip over the Jeremy, you're right. Because I approved it, but I didn't refresh this tab. This Jeremy says, whoa, there's another Jeremy now. You guys better watch out. We're taking over. I am not afraid of you. considering a link between worlds... yeah, right. Considering a link between worlds completely consumed my weekend, I'm tempted to ask something about that. But since I'm sure it's already gotten plenty of discussion, I will restrain myself. Not yet, but it will. But I absolutely love the game. So do we.
Yep.
It's been reported that both the PS4 and Xbox One each sold 1 million units in the first 24 hours. Whether that's true or not, do you guys think these consoles can keep up a momentum like that, or will we see a drop-off like with the Wii U? There are games like Titanfall and Infamous, but were those initial sales more a last-gen fatigue or actual excitement for what's new? A little bit of both, I'd say. Are we going to see a harsh drop-off like we did with the Wii U? Maybe not. Because people have gotten in their head the Wii U doesn't have as many transistors or polygons or whatever, so they're not as excited for it. They're more excited for what's seemingly much more advanced. So they rather have their PS4s and Xbox Ones. So will we see a drop off? Probably as harsh as the Wii U? I doubt it.
Yeah, I mean I think that the PS4 and Xbox One will probably have more of a steady stream of games coming out. But even despite that, I mean, I think people will be excited just for the technological leap.
Yes.
Which is not something I'm super interested in, but...
No, you know, me neither.
We're not the norm, so...
Right. When people say they don't want a Wii U because the library's just not there yet, you know, I pound fist with them and say, I got you, brother. But when they say, like, ugh, I wanted more RAMs, I don't understand that. That's just not a thing I will ever... Guess what? The Wii U outputs natively at 1080p. The Xbox One seems to have a problem doing that, so fuck you and your Xbox One and all your transistors.
Right on.
BK McGlynn, now we're on BK, and he's got a lot of paragraphs here. There's a lot of stuff here. Hey guys, I was listening to one of the episodes from a few weeks back where Craig was talking about his frustration and disappointment with gamers, the industry, and video games in general at this moment, and in the NUE piece you wrote. But I really feel that although video games industry has become a lot bigger because of Call of Duties and GTAs, I feel that nothing changed, quote-unquote, that much. While nowadays people bitch about 720p's and 1080p's, which I also find somewhat pathetic, back in the SNES and Genesis days, people were also endlessly bitching about why Sega was better because of blast processing, and the SNES was better because it had Mode 7. I don't think it was that much different back then. I guess the biggest difference is that we didn't really have the internet like we have now, which makes everything blow out of proportion in a much more extreme ways than what we were used to in gaming generations. Is that AAA? Is that AAA? Oh, he's muting himself. We're going to assume that's AAA.
I hope so. Yes, I'm going to mute myself for the time being while you read this.
Okay. You can probably unmute yourself in about 15 minutes. which makes everything blow out of proportion in much more extreme ways than we were used to in gaming generations before the internet. Back then, it was more contained to a classroom, the living room between a couple of friends and or bullies. That's obviously a fair point. But, I mean, it's not that it's different. It's just that it's tiring now. It's just that as the audience has gotten older and the average player is in their 30s, that's my understanding, they still haven't grown the fuck up. Like, that's the problem. The problem is that the player's mentality hasn't grown up. The industry hasn't grown up. It's not that it's the same. Actually, that is the problem. It is the same. So, no, I know what you mean. He has an absolute point, and it didn't seem as bad back then because it just wasn't as widespread because of the internet. But that's exactly my point. We need to grow past that. The industry needs to grow past that.
The industry in particular needs to grow past that. Yes. I totally agree.
Also, on your point of collecting and preserving games, like, you guys, I'm quite a passionate collector of games, movies, and TV series, and I absolutely hate the way it's going with everything becoming download only. But I think that preserving games won't be that big of a problem at all if you look at how game companies constantly release games in different forms. For example, at the moment, I own Ocarina of Time, four different versions on four different systems, N64, GameCube, 3DS, Wii Virtual Console. When I got the GameCube version, when I thought I had the definitive version and a high resolution, but I was wrong. Years later, there were still versions of the same game being released. I know Ocarina is one of the bigger games, but I can also say this about a more niche title like Ace Attorney Phoenix Wright. The originals were on the GBA. At this time, I owned the original Phoenix Wright trilogy on Nintendo DS, WiiWare, and iOS, which is ugly as fuck. The iOS one, of course. So what I'm trying to say is that I think that classic games will always return in some way or form, like with the Virtual Console, and that will continue to happen in the future over again and over again. So I don't think we really have to worry about games not being preserved in most cases. That's not entirely true. Especially, like, a lot of games that, like, I grew up playing. Like, I mean, one of my big things that I did, like, collecting games like the Super Nintendo and the NES, were buying games that I owned as a kid. And some of them just aren't on virtual, because they're not anywhere. You know,
right.
Deja Vu on the NES, I don't think that's on the virtual console. I don't think Tin Star on the Super Nintendo is on the virtual console. So, it's not a guarantee. And that's not really preserving. That's just kind of getting a new version with new hardware. There's not really preservation in that. Because eventually that new one will become obsolete as well. And maybe even disappear from the internet altogether. Who knows? So it's not really preservation. That's just re-upping. And that's not quite the same thing. I mean, there's a point in that, I understand, but it's no. I'd rather have this physical thing that I know is always going to work, rather than cross my fingers and hope that Tin Star is going to come to some download service, and always come to a download service, because it's not going to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Ocarina of Time has been re-released many times, as with, you know, many Nintendo games and many, many popular games, but there are a lot of games out there lesser known that certainly have not been re-released as often as Ocarina of Time, or possibly at all. You know, so I would love if every game was available on the virtual console, but that's never going to be the case.
I would probably still buy the physical one, given the choice.
I would still do that too, but I'd probably end up double dipping and buying virtual console too, just for convenience.
Yeah, it is convenient, especially if it's only like $5 or whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
He goes on to say, by the way, I collect games myself because I prefer something tangible, something I can hold in my hands with artwork and a booklet, and something I can play almost immediately without having to wait until it's been downloaded on my system. I mean, those are all points why we, you know, do it too. I don't know. Clock blockers go off the deep end this week?
I don't know what he's talking about.
My grandfather gave me a stuffed rough-legged buzzard. It's now the coolest part of my game room. I don't know what that is.
I don't either. I was hoping you did.
No, I don't. Maybe he can elaborate next week. He also asked me if I bought a new pair of shoes this year. Now, that seems weird and nonsensical, but I've talked about in the past how I had shoes for, like, what, 7 years, 8 years? Mm-hmm. And I did buy a new pair because those shoes, like, they're still in really good shape, both of them. Everything's really nice, but I wish I could still have them. But the sole, the heel, kind of broke off on one of them. The sole on the heel. And it's just the heel. And it just sucks. It's like this one small part of one of the shoes. Otherwise, they're in awesome shape for like 8-year-old shoes I bought on like clearance. Probably even older than that. Those shoes have to be almost a decade old. They're so old. But they are in such awesome shape and they're so comfortable. And now they're just that one tiny piece is broken. So yes, I bought new shoes. I bought some like classic looking Vans. And they're teal. And I get compliments. I thought, I was like, I got them. I'm like, holy shit, these are teal. I I ordered them online or something, like Zappos or whatever. And I got them in, and I'm like, dang, these are fucking teal. Like, should I really be wearing these shoes? Can I pull this off? People love them.
Apparently you can.
Yeah, people love the shoes. So I'm like, okay. It's a little chilly wearing them, though, because they're just, like, this, like, really thin canvas, you know? But, nah, otherwise, they're really nice. I like them. I may need to get, like, a pair of, like, plain brown sneakers or something, though. But, nah, they're pretty nice. I can pull them off pretty well. They look good.
I need to get some new sneakers. Mine are, like, 5 years old, and the heel is starting to go on mine. It's not there yet, but it's going to be soon.
Mm. Sneaker talk here on TV Most.
Yep.
Sam says, and this is actually a good one. Sam says, I really don't want this to read as another sob story Euro complaint about us getting stuff late, but I wanted to pull Craig up on his thoughts on the localization process. Feel free to paraphrase. These JRPGs that come to Europe 1 to 2 years later aren't being released in numerous languages, just English. There are exceptions to some of the bigger releases, you know, the ones that don't take much time to come over at all, which is weird. The delay in bringing Shin Megami Tensei 4 over, for example, will not be through translation, not unless its manual is the size of War and Peace. I don't even know if it has a manual. I'm guessing there are obviously some finer technicalities concerning copyright laws or something to that extent. It would be nice if publishers could be more transparent on the subject because there has to be some logic behind their decisions here. So yeah, this isn't meant to put you in your place about the subject or anything like that. Thought you might find it quite interesting. I find it surprising, at least, because I'd always thought the wait resulted in the huge Persona fan from Greece being able to play the game in their native tongue. They don't get to, unfortunately. No, and I don't mind being politely corrected like that. It's actually good to have this perspective. So yeah, if they're not being translated into other languages, that's 1 to 2 years seems like a lot. But he also has a point, though, because there are other things. There are probably copyright considerations. Mm-hmm. Because Europe is not a homogenous area. It's not... North America is, like, just a couple of countries.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot radically different between America and Canada. I mean, we're Canada's violent, stupider, like, cousin, but we're not radically different.
We just don't speak French.
We just don't speak French. We get mad if the telephone system offers to press 1 for Spanish.
We do.
I don't care, but people do.
I don't either, but people in this country are weird.
Yes, they are. So, I'm sure there are a lot of... There's probably all kinds of different copyright laws to consider. There are different classification, like, ratings boards to consider. I mean, PEGI is a big one, but there are also other ones. I hear, like, for instance, Germany is quite strict. That has to be a consideration. Then there are distribution channels, I think, that have to probably be kept in mind. I heard, like, for instance, to get a game in Australia, it's expensive. It's expensive to get it rated, and it's expensive to get it distributed there. And I'm sure that has to be a consideration as well. So... It's good to know. No, it's good to know that I'm a little more educated on the subject now, and I appreciate that. But there, you know, like you said, there are finer things that have to be kept in mind with this. I'm sure they're not just going, we're going to hold on, we're going to sit on this for a year because we hate this whole fucking section of the world. I'm sure that's not what's happening. But like you said...
No, I'm sure it would be in the best interest of the publishers to release it sooner, you know, while people are, especially in this globalized world we live in.
Yeah, before people start importing it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can... You know, talk to people on forums from all over the world. So, you know, it's not like you're not hearing about this game. So I can't imagine it's in their best interest to hold off on it. Right. I'm sure they have reasons.
But he
as
also,
unfortunate as that may be.
But Sam also has a good point where he says that it would help if they were a little more transparent about it. And that's true,
yeah,
too. I think there'd be less like ire if people knew, like, okay, I have to wait. But that's a pretty good reason why I'm waiting.
Yeah.
So that's understandable. But that's everything in the mailbag. Again, if you want to get involved, that's teamulus.net. Just leave a comment in the mailbag section, and we will read it on the air. And now, let's talk about some games we've been playing. Before we do that, you know, I just really want to note, this month, November 2013, has been a really fucking good month for video games.
Totally.
I got an awesome new Zelda and an awesome new Mario. That's me. Like, even if you're, like, into, like, the bigger games, I mean, we got a new Call of Duty, we got a new Assassin's Creed, there's a new Forza. So if you like shooting people or driving cars, new Need for Speed, that's there too. There's a bunch of stuff. There's a new JRPG on the Vita. You got Tearaway. I mean, it seems like every system got something pretty good in the month of November. And if you own all those systems, You know, there's
you got no time left.
You got no time left. There's probably something for you. So that's awesome. So I just really wanted to note how awesome I think November is. Plus the launch of two new consoles. So
yeah, even if you don't have those two new consoles, there's still plenty to play.
Oh god, yeah, because there's not a whole lot to play on those two consoles in the first place.
That's true.
All right, so I played a bunch of stuff. So I played Adventure Time, Explore the Dungeon, because I don't know on a 3DS.
I heard this is not good.
This game, first of all, let me tell you something. The first game greets you with this awesome rendition of the Adventure Time theme song, you know, with Hey Ice King lyrics that are relevant to the game. It is, this game greets you with boring music, and you press B for enter and A to cancel. That is not
okay.
You don't do that on a Nintendo console. You do not do that on a Nintendo system. Are you insane? And it was just all downhill from there. I did that. I'm like, oh, this is not a good start. It's the graphics are just, they're not very good. They're weird. There's like no aliasing, which is weird because like they could be a lot better looking, but they're just really kind of fuzzy and distorted. And it's a top down, it's an overhead view, and it's a dungeon crawler. And the dungeon is really boring. The designs are really boring. You go down, you collect loot. You walk so slow. So slow. And the dungeons are so wide open. Like, it's just, you're just slowly just kind of chugging along. And there's, like, a random pickup, like a drop, that will give you, like, twice your speed for a limited time. And I'm like, this should be my normal speed. This is how we should be moving. It's just, I don't even really want to talk that much about the game because it's just, I just want to leave it at, like, it sucks. It's so disappointing.
Wow.
The music is bad. The movement's bad. The combat is wholly uninteresting. The loot system is fucked. I don't even understand it. Like, you collect money, just stacks of money, and then that's one stack, and you get two stacks. So your money is, it's a whole stack, but it's measured in, like, one stack is, like, one. I don't understand that. And then when you leave the dungeon and go back to, like, the hub area, there's stuff you can buy. Basically, like, upgrades, like, your very basic stats, like health and strength and stuff like that. And they're expensive, and money's not that easy to come by. So, like, it takes a while to earn enough money to get one of these upgrades. But if you go back to the hub, Princess Bubblegum takes all the money you didn't spend as a tax, as she calls it, before you go back into the dungeon.
What?
So if you die, or if you're like, oh, I need a break, I need to go back to the surface or whatever, I don't feel like playing anymore or whatever. If you go back to the surface and don't spend your money because you're five shy of getting that upgrade you wanted, as soon as you go back down, she takes everything you have. I'm like, what sense? That doesn't
that
make any
stupid.
Sense. That is right. And you know what? People didn't. I understand. Like there were some people that didn't like Hey Ice King. Like Seth was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think I've made my case as to why I like it. It's not a challenging game. It's not particularly difficult. I just feel like video games can be like swimming. You know, like sometimes it can be challenging. You're doing different strokes. You're doing laps. Some games are like that. Some games are just you're hanging out on a raft, kind of drifting around. And it's pleasant just the same, and that's what Hey Ice King was. It's not hard. It was just really pleasant. But even if you didn't like the gameplay, it's hard to argue that, like, the music and the art and the writing wasn't all fantastic. Because it was. The music and the animation, all that was great. Right?
I totally agree. I mean, I'm not even a fan of the show, and I really enjoyed what I played of Ice King because of those for those reasons, not just because of the gameplay.
Right. So now take all that. Basically, take the banality, the sort of, I don't know, uninteresting components of Hey Ice King, and then strip away all that pleasantness. So basically all you have is just banality, and that's Explore the Dungeon.
That's really disappointing.
It is such a disappointing game. It's so boring. There's just nothing fun about that. And this just goes, and I thought it was a sure bet. Like, I really enjoyed Hey Ice King. It seemed like way forward, you know, knew what to do with the license. And a dungeon crawler, hey, that's pretty fun. I'm down for that. Nope. They fucked it. It sucks. And I mean, this also goes to show that way forward is not, for some reason, like, people like are in total love with Wave 4. They do some good things, but it's also there's also a harsh reminder that, like, Wave 4 does not always do good things, guys. And this is one of them. This is not an awesome game. Don't buy this game.
I will not.
I have a really nice BMO collector's edition on my shelf now, but other than that, there's absolutely no value in this game. It's not good. It's not good at all. I played Killer Instinct on Xbox One. Now, this has a really interesting pricing. It's free to play. You download the game. It's like 3.5 gigs. And you have access to one character. Right now, that character is Jago, the sort of like ninja-like character. And it rotates. Apparently, I will have access to another character at some point in the future, and it'll rotate.
Do you have any idea when that will be?
I do not.
No. They just tell you it will rotate at some point?
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's more information somewhere, but I don't know where it is.
I mean, I guess if it's free, you can't complain, but...
Right. So you have access to one character. At this point, it's Jago. You have access to one stage. Stages don't really make a big difference anyway, though. You can fight against the other characters. There are six characters total, so you can fight against six characters. You know, whether it's offline by yourself, you can go online. You know, see, you do have access to a little bit of content. Free. The characters, I think, are $5 a piece. Is that accurate? That seems accurate. Ooh. $4 or $5 a piece. But you can buy, you can spend $20 and you get access to all six characters that are currently available and two more characters that will be available later. And I think that's Fulgore and Spinal will be available later. Right now you have Jago, Thunder, which is this weird Native American, Glacius, which I hate his new design, Orchid, Saberwolf, and some new chick. I forget her name. She's not a classic character. She's the only new one so far. So for $20, you get access to those characters. If you pay $60, you get... I don't know what you get. Obviously, you get access to all that, but I guess costume colors and so... I don't know what else you get access to at $60. Mm-hmm. For triple the price, better make it worth it. But for $20, it's really not that bad.
Doesn't sound unreasonable. I mean,
it needs more modes. Like it's really paper thin mode wise, but $20 for a few more characters and stuff is not a bad idea. The thing is though, look, Killer Instinct just ain't that great of a fighting game. You know, I enjoyed it when I was younger, Killer Instinct and Killer Instinct Gold. Because this was a time before when the only other fighting games that you could play were like Street Fighter 2 and Mortal Kombat 3. Like, that was it. There was nothing around.
Right.
You know, this was before Marvel vs. Capcom. This was before Guilty Gear and Blaze Blue. This was before Dead or Alive, before Soul Calibur. You know, this is before all that stuff.
It's like all there was.
Right. So now, the game just doesn't... It just seems really sort of quaint. It just doesn't... It's just not that great. It just hasn't grown up with the rest of the world, I don't feel like.
So does it play similar to the old games? Or
yes.
It's just not super advanced?
Yes. The way the old games play, and it's really tough to describe, basically there's a variety of different ways you can combo. Certain moves link into certain other moves that link into other certain moves. There's this whole, like, I think Killer Instinct Cold called it combo theory. There's this whole, like... series of operations to link into different moves to create different combos. Now the infamous combo breaker is when someone performs a specific move to break the specific kind of combo that you are making.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of, now if you try to initiate the wrong kind of combo breaker, you get like dizzy and you can't do anything for like 2 or 3 seconds. You just get pounded on. So there's a little bit of strategy involved. Like, it's not an awful game. Like, we're not talking like that weird fighter on the Jaguar bad. This is it's an okay game, and it might be worth your $20, but there are just so many other better fighters out there that to me it's not even really worth my time. I'm playing it because it's free. I haven't paid any money to it. And
it's not even worth your time when you paid $0
for it. No, that's right. I haven't played that much of it. And to be fair, I can't give a full assessment of it because I only have access to Jago. I fought against the other characters. I played the game quite a bit. But, I mean, I've only played as Jago. So I can't give a fair, full opinion, to be fair. But I also think that, like, just from what I've played, from what I know of past Killer Instinct games, and from what I know of other fighting games, this is really just sort of mediocre at best.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, I wouldn't say mediocre at best. I would say it's solid mediocre. It is firmly mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not much better than that.
That sucks, because I know people were so excited for one of Rare's franchises to come back. I mean, I never played Killer Instinct when I was younger. I mean, I was not a big fan of fighting games, be it Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat or Killer Instinct.
Mm.
As, like you said, that's about all there was. But, I mean, bringing back, you know, it was really exciting when we found out that one of Rare's franchises was going to come back, but it's unfortunate that it hasn't evolved at all.
Yeah, it's not even developed by Rare.
Right, that's true.
But, I mean, Killer Instinct was never that great of a fighting game. It just, there was this novelty in it that it was, like, weird, like, Primal Rage, but not completely shitty, like, Primal Rage. And I think that that's why it gained some notoriety. Now, it's not completely awful. The past ones weren't, and this one's not. But it's just, you have so many better options out there.
Not completely awful isn't good enough anymore.
Right, exactly. If you just want to screw off in a free-to-play game, even if you just want to throw $20 at it, maybe that's not even a bad idea, but you have better options. You have better options with your time, I think.
Right.
It's not even just the cost. I think it's more about your time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a brand-new system, and sometimes, you know, you make concessions on a brand-new system. You know, I want to play this otherwise. Because, I mean, if Killer Instinct came out, like, 2 years from now, I'd have other stuff to play on my Xbox One. I wouldn't even fucking look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the only game I've played on my Xbox One. I kind of want to get Dead Rising 3. Like, kind of. Like, not really. Like, that's the only, like, retail game I think that really interests me.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want Crimson Dragon as well. That's a downloadable game. But the reviews have been really hot and cold. And it has, like, it's weird because it's a $20 downloadable game. But then it also has, like, in-game purchases or whatever.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it has, like, a weird, like, in-game currency. I'm not really clear on what it does, but maybe it revives you after a game over or something like that. And the game pesters you to buy this stuff. And I'm like...
That just turns me off right there.
And apparently you can earn the stuff in-game. Like, it's not like you can't attain that stuff in-game, but apparently the game wants you to also spend money. And I'm like, if I buy a $20, like, on Rails Dragon game, I think you've gotten my money. I hate to break it. That's about all you get.
Right.
So I've been reluctant. I've been a little hesitant. There's a demo... I'd love to give it, but I don't think there is a demo. So, have not given that a shot. I also played a little bit of Need for Speed Most Wanted. Not Rivals. I did buy Rivals for the PS4 because I heard good things about it, and I just wanted a game other than Killzone, Zone of Killing, to play on my PS4. And the weird thing is I just haven't gotten around to it and playing a bunch of other stuff. But that when I went out to buy that, I saw like Need for Speed Most Wanted, the new Most Wanted, not the old Most Wanted.
Yeah, that's so weird.
That is really confusing.
Two Most Wanted.
I don't know why they did that. The new Most Wanted, it was like $15, $20 for the Vita, and I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. So I picked it up, and I played a little bit by myself. I actually played a lot online with my friend Jenny. She's, for people who watch like YouTube, you might know her. Her account is Johnny Depp Fan. And so all we do, at first, like, we were trying to figure out like how to like race, because it's an open world racing game. Which is kind of neat. It's a lot like Burnout Paradise, which I think, you know, people might be a little more familiar with. Yeah. And we really couldn't figure that out. So instead we just kept doing takedowns on each other. We just kept finding each other and just smashing into each other. We just did that for a solid hour and a half. That was really great. But that's a pretty fun game. You know, it's been a long time since I played a Need for Speed. I think I played Need for Speed Carbon on the DS. But I don't own it now, so I don't know if that's like a false memory or something. I want to say I had played it. But the last one I played with any real enthusiasm, I think, was Underground 2 on the Xbox. Like me and my brother used to play Underground and Underground 2 a lot. So that's the last time I actually put any time into a Need for Speed. And I kind of prefer those because they had like, what's that?
I don't remember the last time I played Need for Speed. I think I have Need for Speed The Run because Best Buy had it for like $5.
I preferred this style of like Underground where like it was supposed to be like hip and edgy and there was like neon colors and there's sort of like, I don't know. I kind of like that sort of urban, neon-y kind of feel that those games had. Like Most Wanted and Rivals are a little more, they're more realistic. The style is more realistic as in the presentation and the graphics. The gameplay is a lot
still arcadey.
They're still arcadey, which is great because I'm not into like Forza or Gran Turismo. Those that sim racers are not my thing.
Right.
So the gameplay is still great, which is why I can actually play these games and still enjoy them, because I like the gameplay, but the style is not my bag.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just changing with the times. I mean, I guess when Underground and Underground 2 came out, that was a thing, so...
Right.
But no, I had a good time with that. But I've also been playing, and you can chime in on these two, Super Mario 3D World and Legend of Zelda: Link Between Worlds.
I will chime in on these two, because those are pretty much the only things I've played this week, so...
Super Mario...
Mostly Zelda, but a little bit of Mario, too.
Mostly Zelda for me, too. Super Mario 3D World is so fucking good. It is so good. Oh, my God. The level design is just great, and there's just so much variety. And they waste no time giving you that cat suit. Everyone knows you want to play as a cat, and it's like that's the first thing you come across is a bell power-up, and then you're a cat.
It's adorable.
It's so... Oh, my God. He meows. He cleans himself. And if you ever tried walking as the cat, not holding the run button, just walking, he just kind of trots like a cat does. It's super awesome. And then if you get the flagpole as a cat, he's like, meow. It's awesome.
I thought it was adorable when you finish the level and, you know, it does a peace sign or whatever, and then you go, meow.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I love it, too. I just think it's such a great game, and it's not... There's a lot of this talk about how it's just like, oh, it's just a port of a 3DS game, or, oh, it's just a sequel to a 3DS game. Even after just the first two worlds, I can tell you it is more than that. I mean, that was the start. That's the obvious starting point. The gameplay is a lot like that weird pseudo kind of, like, full-roaming 3D, but... mostly just kind of guided stages, like, because you can run around, like, you can, it's not just side-scrolling, but the stages are kind of guided, you know, it's a guided experience, so it's not free-roaming like Mario 64 or Mario Sunshine or anything like that, which I kind of like that style. It does make it sometimes tough to judge how far away or how close you are to the TV screen, like, depth, I guess. It's really hard to judge that sometimes. Those gunshots...
I'm wondering that, too. What the fuck is going on there?
I'm kind of terrified right now. Wow. So, is that coming closer?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. This is really cool and also really terrifying.
Fucking stump necks.
No.
They're coming for you.
Man, I don't...
Oh, my God. What is that?
That's a lot of gunshots.
It definitely sounds like gunshots. Oh, my God.
All right. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to shut off my light so no one can see me from the road.
Good idea.
And then I'm going to shut my door. Wow. Maybe I'll edit this.
I'm not even there. That was actually really scary.
Holy crap.
Holy shit, man.
Wow. All right. So, this is a video game podcast, and I'm not dead right now, so.
That's good news. If you stop talking, I'm going to call the police.
Yeah, please do. I don't know what that light is. Is that a car? What is going on out there? All right. Well, whatever. Let's talk about video games and pretend that didn't happen. You could hear that.
Yeah, I heard it, for sure.
Wow, now I'm really weirded out. So Super Mario 3D World is really good, and I'm really kind of scared right now. No, fantastic game. Much more. Did you play one of those Toad levels?
I did, yeah.
Where you can't jump?
Those are really interesting. I mean, I didn't even know about those going into it. Is that one of the things that, like, they spoiled in that spoiler trailer or whatever?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. I know they showed a bunch of spoilery stuff. I tried to avoid some of that. I mean, I ended up seeing some of it anyway. But, yeah, those are really cool. Certainly different from anything else you see in the game.
The Toad levels are small. They're you know, smallish worlds. But Toad – and these – this whatever Toad that you're playing as is not the Toad that you can select to play the main game from. I don't know. It's really confusing. It is a Toad. It's not the Toad. So you play as this Toad. He can't jump. So you have to navigate this level collecting, like, 5 green stars and avoiding enemies to finish level, which I think is really cool. And you can rotate rotate the camera all around the level, which you need to do because some of these stars are sort of hidden. Some of the paths you need to take are hidden. So you need to sort of look, you know, at three-dimensional space to find these stars, and keep in mind that you can't jump. It's really a nice sort of change of pace.
Yeah, they definitely feel very different from the rest of the game, for sure. But Smokey stopped. Smokey wants the rest of my sandwich. I'm not going to let him have it.
Tough shit, dog. So, man, those...
Are there one of those in every world, or do you know how that works?
Was there one in the desert world? The desert's the second one, and I can't remember whether it was one there or not. I want to say yes, but I can't remember. Huh. I don't know. I'll need to check. But I thought that
was cool. I mean, I certainly hope that there's not too many of them, because they are very slow-paced, but it's definitely a nice mix-up to the formula, I think.
I think like, one per level is not too much.
I think that's fair.
And then
the music in this game is fantastic, too.
The music is great. Everything's great about it. Man, they really knocked the ball out of the park.
I just get so happy playing it. I mean, now I want to go play it now.
Yeah, I kind of do, too. All right, let's get through this podcast and we go play it.
Sounds good.
And I also played The Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds, and I played a lot of this. And I'm not done with it yet.
I have played it, too.
I'm absolutely thrilled to say it's a new Zelda, and I love it. And I haven't been able to say that in a long time.
I feel much the same. I think this, for me, is the best Zelda since Wind Waker. And I think everybody who's listening to this knows how I feel about Wind Waker.
Right. For me,
not to say that I haven't enjoyed the game since then, but this is the first one that feels like, wow, this is it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it takes place in Aki, get away from the door, dude. it takes place in a Hyrule that's pretty much the same as the one from A Link to the Past. Slightly different. There's no Dark World, but there is an alternate Low Rule. Which, for all intents and purposes, operates as the Dark World. Has same enemies,
it's
same
very
music.
Similar to the Dark World, yeah. I mean, visually and the enemies.
Yeah.
It basically takes the place of the Dark World. It's very... Very blatant homage.
But it's fragmented. Like, it's breaking up. It's literally breaking apart. So, like, you can't just enter Low Rule from one crack and just sort of go anywhere. Well, you can use the fast travel after you've done that. But before you have the fast travel, you actually need to enter separate cracks to go to different points in Low Rule, because it's not continuous. Which is... I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think there's anything really wrong or beneficial about that. I think it just is.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. I mean, I don't know really what you gain or lose from it.
Right.
So, not really sure what the point of it is, but never really bothered me.
I think it's sort of the game guiding you in a way to pay attention to the locations of cracks, because sometimes, like, cracks are... You need to pay attention to where these cracks enter or come out to find hidden areas or heart containers or stuff like that. So it could be the game's way of nudging you into the thinking that the placement of the cracks are important without actually telling you that they're important.
The cracks act the same way as the tiles in A Link to the Past that would, you know, warp you between the light and the dark world, but you don't have the mirror, so you can't just warp at any time. You have to use the cracks.
And sometimes they appear on, like, different elevations and stuff in different worlds. Yeah, the placement, I think that might be the game's way of telling you, like, you need to pay attention to where these cracks are placed. That's important on a macro level, but also on a micro level. So that might be, if that's what they're doing, that's actually really clever. But I like the item rental system, because you can get most of the pertinent items, like, right away and rent them. Now, when you die, you lose them. I died once. You can buy them. They cost way more to buy them. But then, not only do you not lose them when you die, you can upgrade them. There's this octopus that has 100 babies scattered around Hyrule and Low Rule. And for
such a terrible... Maybe a worse mom than your mom.
What a careless mother.
100 babies? Come on.
Right? So for every 10 babies you bring back, the octopus will upgrade one of your items, and it becomes a little more powerful. And I think this is a fantastic system, because it means that you can tackle dungeons in any order. You can explore most of the overworld at your leisure. And for me, it's just been great. I've loved this. But it also, but it doesn't mean that, like, everything's open to you right away. There are items that prevent progress. Not many of them, but some of them. So, for instance, like, the Power Glove and Titan's Mitt, both of which are used to pick up rocks. Titan's Mitt is used to pick up heavy rocks. You don't get those. You don't rent those. You don't buy those. You get them later on. The Flippers, another one. Pegasus Boots. These are all items you don't buy. You don't even get those. Well, actually, the Power Glove, I think you do. Do you get that? Yeah, I think you do get that in a dungeon. And the thing is, you actually do get items in dungeons, believe it or not. They're not like they're not like items that you would get in the past. They're not like, oh, you get this item and then use this to solve puzzles and then use this to kill the boss. But I think I'm pretty sure every dungeon has an item of some kind. It may not be necessary, but you're probably going to get your hands on it.
You can finish the dungeon without getting it, which I thought was pretty interesting. I mean, it's like going back to the original Zelda where you could get like the bomb upgrades.
Yeah.
You know, where they're hidden in there, but you could completely miss them.
Because like the first item I got in the dungeon was, I don't want to give too much away, it was a Hylian shield. I had no idea it was in there. It took me completely off guard that like this item that I could totally miss was in this dungeon.
What the fuck? I haven't even found this.
I had no idea it was in the game, so.
I actually had no idea that was in the game until I street passed somebody who had it. And I figured maybe that was in the last dungeon or, you know, the final dungeon. I guess it's not if you have it. God damn it.
Nope, I have it. So
that's what I love about this game.
Yeah, you know, it's actually surprising.
There are things to find and you can actually miss them.
Yep, it is actually a genuinely surprising and really engaging Zelda game. It gives you so much freedom, but at the same time, it's not like the entire game is just open to you. Like, there's still things to figure out and still things to find. It does blockade progress using various methods in some way, but for the most part, it's a really open game, and you can just pretty much figure it out on your own. And it's actually kind of challenging. Like I said, I died at a boss. Like, that blew my... The bosses are fantastic so far. The bosses I fought have been great, and they've been reasonably challenging. Not super hard, but reasonably challenging. And some of the puzzles are awesome, too. A lot of the puzzles are around, like, movement, like, getting around. And so, like, you'll be in a room, and this room will have different, you know, platforms at different elevations, and it's a matter of trying to navigate these different elevations, not just keeping that verticality in mind, but also keeping in mind sort of like the fact that you can walk across walls by merging with the wall as a painting. So you have to keep in mind all these different axes when solving, you know, these sort of movement or navigation puzzles. It's really, really clever stuff. I really like the dungeon so far. They've been all quite different. In one of them, you have to lead someone around. In another, it's dark and, like, you can light torches to, like, see better, but certain platforms can actually be seen in the dark. So there's a lot of different angles with these dungeons, different gimmicks. It's just the first time in a long time I've been genuinely surprised by a Zelda game. Just totally engaged. Was challenged a little bit and surprised, and that to me is just is awesome. It's a great feeling, and I love it. I think it's a great game.
I totally agree. I'm really impressed with how old school this game does feel. You know, it doesn't bombard you with cutscenes and text all the time. I mean, this feels, you know, I mean, I know it is a sequel to A Link to the Past and it's been marketed that way, but I mean, it feels more old school than like even Minish Cap and the Oracle games.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just that it's in 2D. It certainly has those old school sensibilities to it.
Yeah, you are. There's a brief intro, and you're not really doing a whole lot. Then you're like, you have a sword. You're delivering it to someone. You can't use it. So I mean, there's a brief period where you're not really given full reign of the game. But the game's not bombarding you with tutorials or a whole lot of text either. It's just taking that brief period to set up. And then, even then, it's still very quickly that you have your sword and you're off. You don't even have a shield right away. Like, you don't... You have to find where the shield is. It's not that hard, don't get me wrong. But no one hands you the shield, even.
Right.
So the game's just like, here's your sword, see you later, bye, bye, get out. And I think that's awesome. But there have been slight modernizations to it. Like, you move, like, faster than you do in a Link to the Past.
Yeah.
Sort of the enemies, like the Cyclops giant from the Dark World or Low World, when he's hurling bombs, he doesn't stop in this one. He just keeps throwing bombs.
I know.
He throws them so fast.
Have you gone to the Treacherous Tower or whatever it's called?
No, what is that?
It's like a Savage Labyrinth kind of thing. Like,
oh, no, I haven't been there yet. Stuff.
Well, there's a room where you have to, like, fight, like, four or five of them at once. And, oh, my God, it's... When I first got to that room, I lost a lot of hearts right away, I'll tell you.
Man, I would shield up and upgraded fire wand the hell out of those guys. Mm-hmm. But it's... I mean, that's just another example of how it's a little more challenging. It just moves faster. What was I going to say? I guess I forgot what I was going to say. But... it definitely does have some old school sensibilities, which I like. Doesn't waste a whole lot of your time. But it does, you know, in some ways also feel more modern. There's also, another way it feels more modern is you have like this weird quick equip kind of system for your items where, yeah, you can press select, not start. Chris mentioned this on Twitter. He's like really annoyed that you had to press select and not start to go to your item screen. And I am too. It's really annoying. But there's a big items button on your bottom screen. You press that, and you can equip buttons items to X or Y doing that. But what you can also do is you can do, like, this weird scrolling list where you can scroll through things on the touchscreen. You don't go to a separate screen. You can still move around with your left thumb, and then use your right thumb on the touchscreen to sort of, like, scroll through items. And you can actually change the size of that wheel. So if you really only want a quick select through like four items as opposed to like all of them, you can do that. It's a really interesting system. So it's another way the game has been modernized a bit.
Yeah, I don't use that all that much, but I do like that it's there because, I mean, in some of the dungeons, I mean, you do only have two items slots at any given time.
Yeah.
You may have to switch between a few different things, so it's great to have that. I don't use it all that often. I still end up hitting select and just switching it out that way. But it's great that it's there. I did think it was a little strange that they don't give you that right away, although maybe that's because you're not supposed to rent everything right away like I did.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I did too. Yeah, they don't even give you the ability to equip two items at the same time right away. You have to find an item that allows you to equip something to both X and Y. Because I think it's just Y at first, isn't it? Just Y.
And then, yeah, I believe so.
And then you get an item that allows you to equip something to X as well.
Mm-hmm. Even then, I mean, that didn't feel that strange to me because, you know, being that this is in the world of Link to the Past, I mean, you only had one item in that game, so.
I suppose.
It felt natural to me, although, you know, having two is definitely better, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah. But, just a great game. I'm absolutely loving it. And I still have so many more games that I really want to, get into, like, Need for Speed Rivals. I mean, I have Tearaway.
Mm-hmm.
I really want
to
give.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to checking that out. I ordered that from Best Buy because it's on sale this week.
Nice.
Should be coming in the mail. It may have come today or it's coming tomorrow because I got something from Best Buy that I haven't opened yet. I ordered that and Ratchet and Clank into the Nexus.
Oh, there's another great game that came out this month.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to play Ease. I'll probably play Ease as soon as we're done recording. And Mario Party.
I'm going to download one of those old Ease games that's on sale right now.
Nice, do that, yes. Ease games are on sale. I will upload this tomorrow on Wednesday, so it'll be just in time for everyone to enjoy.
Assuming you don't forget.
Yeah, assuming I don't forget. This way everyone can enjoy it on Thanksgiving after they've stuffed themselves, and they can sit back and listen to me and Chris Yammer and get shot at.
so I'm glad we haven't heard anything else, because that was a little terrifying even 1,000 miles away from you.
Oof, that was weird, dude. And there's weird, like, lights out in the street right now. I don't even want to, like, look out the door. But, yeah, the Ease games are on sale for, like, $7.50 a piece on PlayStation Network. So if you have a Vita or a PSP, Ease 7 and Ease Oath and Felghana, awesome games. $15 for two great games. Highly recommended.
Yeah, I've wanted to get into that series for a long time. I know you and Seth have both talked about it, and I've heard really good things, but, you know, just never looked into it. So I'll definitely check one of those out right now.
Good plan. I mean, I've been playing some really fun games, some not-so-fun games like Adventure Time, and still more games to look forward to. It's just great. It's a great month for games.
Yeah.
Have you played any other games besides Mario or Zelda?
No, that's about it for me, actually.
Oh.
I didn't have a lot of time during the week, and then when the weekend came and I got those two, Zelda really took over. You know, one of the things I love about that, I mean, I was concerned about the fact that it uses the overworld from A Link to the Past. You know, one of my favorite things is exploring the world and, you know, finding new things and that sense of discovery. And I love the way that, you know, they do things that remind you of A Link to the Past,
but then they twist it. Just mix it up just a little bit, you know, throw in that surprise for you. I don't want to spoil any of those things. But right. It's certainly not going to always do the things you might expect.
There's one thing I really like is that oftentimes when you would like find like a cave in like Twilight Princess or Ocarina of Time or whatever, it's really kind of empty. There might have been rupees, maybe a Sculptilla or something. There's not a whole lot happening in there. There are certain caves in A Link Between Worlds that are whole, like, they're basically challenge rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And
they have, like, treasure hunters in them.
They have treasure hunters in them, and then there's treasure in the room. They're all babbling about how they want to get the treasure, and, of course, you can get it before them. And they can be kind of tough. There's this one I was doing. Did you find the one that uses the Pegasus boots?
Yeah, I did find that one, yeah.
Fuck that room! I spent a half an hour there, and I walked out because that was a bitch. Did you solve that one?
I think I did. What I did, is that the one where you have to hit the switches and then run past the gates or whatever?
Yes, but the Pegasus boots operate so differently in this game. Like, you don't stop right away, you skid.
Right, yeah. That is definitely a challenge. I ended up using the bombs on the switches so I could get a little closer and give myself a little more time, but that doesn't necessarily compensate for the fact that you're going to skid.
Oh, but you're still smarter than me. I should probably do that too. But I mean, that's another thing that's just sort of surprised me. They're not in A Link to the Past. You really haven't seen too many things like this in past Zelda games. It's just really nice to stumble upon a cave that's not just a treasure chest with some rupees in it. It's a whole, I mean, there's rupees in these rooms, generally speaking, right. but at the same time, but you have to work for your rupees. It's a whole,
there's like, quite a few of those too.
Yeah. There's a few of them.
Use all the different items, you know?
Yep. So that was definitely a nice surprise. I thought just these mini dungeons almost. Mm-hmm. So I thought those were really cool. But do you have anything you'd like to add about either Mario or Zelda?
No, I am loving Zelda, and I am definitely looking forward to putting more time into Mario.
Awesome. Well, then, I suppose we can end this this episode.
Shy of 2 hours, a short one this week.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. No Seth to yammer on about something. Who knows? I don't know. He's hanging out with the Mayans or the Aztecs. I always do it today.
he's outside your house.
He's trying to find himself. I don't know. But I hope everyone in America has a nice Thanksgiving. And if you're not in America, I hope you enjoy your Thursday just the same. I want to thank everyone for listening. And until next time, you guys take it easy.
Peace.